Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We will open the meeting with the reading of the Declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. In an effort to promulgate the philosophy here in Philadelphia, this lodge has two weekly meetings, on Sunday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon, and on Wednesdays from 7:45 until 9 o'clock. Now, the Sunday morning meetings consist of a talk, a forum, or panel, and all Sunday morning meetings are based on a particular theme. The theme for May is psychism and spirituality, and the subject of the talk for this morning is lower and higher psychic powers. Now, on Wednesday evenings, we have a study class in The Ocean of Theosophy by William P. Judge. And the subject that will be discussed this coming Wednesday is Evolution of Humanity, Nature Unaided Fails. Now, we have a reference library, which is open each Wednesday from 5:30 until 7:30. And this library carries a full line of theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines. Also, you will find other references that may be of interest to you. If this is the case, we suggest you contact the student who's available at that time. Also, you will find a reference in connection with the evening's class. Outside of the library, you will find straight theosophical literature on display. And this may be purchased either during the library hours or before or after our regular meetings. Now, all activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, and all are most welcome to participate. Now, the reading in reference to the morning's talk has been selected from an article written by William Pugh Judge, The Closing Cycle. We will have the subject of the talk for this morning is lower and higher psychic powers.
Were you going to do the reading?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, please.
We have to do as Buddha told his disciples: preach, promulgate, expound, illustrate, and make clear and detail all the great things we have learned. That is our work, and not the bringing out of surprising things about clairvoyance and other astral matters, nor the blinding of the eye of science by discoveries impossible for them but easy for the occultists. The Master's plan has not altered, He gave it out long ago. It is to make the whole world at large better, to prepare a right soul for the growing out of the powers of soul, which are dangerous if they spring up in our present selfish soil.
Words are such amazing things. Our title is Lower and Higher Psychic Powers. But can a power be higher or lower? Take any of our powers. Power to see. Can that be higher or lower? No. Power is power. And power is one. It's the same in all of us. The difference is in the instrument we're using, which is our personal nature. Not ourselves as perceivers. That power is unity. Then there is the individual knowledge and experience. And most importantly, the intention. Why are we using any power? Whether it's the power to speak or walk or think, imagine why the motive is more important than any of the other considerations. So they're not lower and higher powers. It is power and how we choose to use it. The real physical body is not the one we think we have. That is merely matter that has been attracted to the real physical body. For the real physical body is called astral or starry, electrical, magnetic. It is our real instrument, and the physical body is made up of lower matter. But that inner man is our real instrument and is the connecting link between the mind and the physical body. In other words, while we are here on this physical earth, the senses are in reality in the astral body, and we see through the physical because of the astral. So we have to remember that. We're not physical beings. We're not astral beings. We are spiritual beings using various instruments to gain experience and knowledge. And what is our purpose? Our purpose is to regain our spiritual recognition of who and what we really are, which, words again, it's so much fun. We all knew when we came here to this earth, and we all knew why we came to this earth, to gain in our own knowledge and experience, to gain in our use, the proper use of powers, and to elevate the consciousness in the lower kingdoms so it can be ready to move on to the human kingdom. So being a human means tremendous responsibility, but it also means tremendous opportunity. There is a saying that the lesser gods and some of the higher gods, which really is principles and intelligences in nature, are jealous of us because only in the human is there the opportunity to choose and to bring all of the instrumentation of the universe into one's own power and use. So if there's responsibility, there's obviously also danger because we are too often ignorant and too often selfish. This is from William Q. Judge. And if you really are interested in this subject, the best way is to peruse the writings of William Q. Judge. HPB gives us plenty of warnings, but Mr. Judge gives us plenty of explanations. The astral substance, being the register of all thoughts, sounds, pictures, and other vibrations, and the inner man being a complete person, able to act with or without coordination with the physical, all the phenomena may be explained. In the astral substance are all sounds and pictures, and in the astral man remain impressions of every event, however remote or insignificant. These, acting together, produce the phenomena which seem so strange to those who deny or are unaware of the postulates of occultism. To attempt to acquire the use of psychic powers for mere curiosity or for selfish ends is dangerous. Philosophy and ethics must first be learned and practiced before any development is to be indulged in. Those who know all about the psychical world, its denizens, and its laws are proceeding with a reform in morals and philosophy before any great attention will be accorded to the strange and seductive phenomena possible for the inner powers of man. And that reform in morals and philosophy we know as theosophy itself. As we read the writings, we are continually warned that the development we should be after is of understanding, sympathy, compassion, altruism, that the psychic powers themselves are a natural development of the developed soul. So we are usually acting in reverse of what we should. Now, what are some of those we call psychic powers, which are really, when used in a selfish personal way, lower, but are spiritual when used in the proper way? Levitation, cohesion. It is said that cohesion is the force, and that when the operator of this power separates or disperses the atoms and then sends whatever it is off to wherever it's to go, removing the dispersion, the cohesion will act again. Now, perhaps we've heard or seen some instances of this with yogis or fakirs. Many of these things are done publicly in India, for example, and are considered quite normal. And if we read about it, we discover that often there is a family line where this knowledge of how to perform these particular feats is passed on. I don't know how many of you saw it, but recently there was a photograph that a family in India has passed this knowledge on for generations. It isn't even psychical, although it must have something to do with the astral, where they take the roots of living trees and create bridges across rivers. It's absolutely amazing. I'm sure if you Google living roots as bridges, you will see it. Precipitation. And that was something during the time of HPB and Judge that was quite common. And if you want to see the letters from the Mahatmas that were precipitated, they're in the British Museum. There's also an example that Mr. Judge gives that HPB was showing him, that when you go to do something like that, if you don't keep your focus on it, you lose the performance of it. And she showed him by precipitating a message on a piece of paper in front of him and then taking her mind off it, and the word got messed up. So these are demonstrable things by one who knows, but it's not something that we want to go after for ourselves. For what purpose? Because usually such things lead either to vanity, where you think you're more spiritual than someone else because you can do those things, which is ridiculous. The powers are available to all, and spiritual is how you act, not what little psychic things you could perform. There's communicate at any distance. You know, the amusing thing about all this is all of it has since been materialized. We have created machinery that duplicates everything that we have read of being done. We have fax machines and computers, and now we're sure you've seen it. They can now even fax in 3D. So you take an object here and scan it, and it is reproduced in a factory somewhere, so they know the exact specifics of what they're to produce. The interesting thing for a student of theosophy, when this was first attempted, what was sent in 3D was a miniature sculpture of the Buddha, which is certainly a wonderful way to start such a thing. There is looking into the mind and heart of others, reading the mind. And we'd like to quote, "The law of the lodge, if one is looking in such a thing and sees that this is secret to the person, they would immediately cease doing it. There is no desire for secrecy. And the law of the lodge is, if the student or the disciple doesn't stop immediately, his power is immediately taken from him. In the case of any other person, he must take the consequence of this sort of burglary, for nature has her laws and her policemen." So in other words, you just can't act as though, because you have a power, you have the right to use it. Apportation, moving objects without physically touching them. Well, we're told there's two methods. One is using the astral arm, literally, and picking up the astral of the object you want to move. And it, of course, is then moved. This can be accomplished at as much as 10 feet away from the object. But if it's further, it is said it is using the elementals. They have the power, when directed by the inner man, to carry objects by changing the polarity. These elemental entities are used when things are brought from longer distances than the length to which the astral arm may be stretched. But of course, we are also warned, along with the warning about not using psychic powers, is to avoid the elementals, not to attract them to you, not to spend great time thinking about them. Study them in a generalized way, but you do not want such a power, because it will turn on you if you are not developed. And then there's clairvoyance, clear seeing. It's very rare that it is the spiritual vision, clear seeing. It's usually only the ordinary aspects of astral matter that is seen. Wonderful article by Robert Crosby called True Clairvoyance. True clairvoyance is not gained by sitting for development. One might sit for development 10 million years and in the end be only capable of sitting. The true power is gained by trying to realize our own divine nature and to act as divinity acts, by trying to get all the possessions possible that we may place them at the service of our fellow men. The power is gained by self-sacrificing service, and in no other way. The divine in us has its fullest expression in self-sacrifice. As man moves along, realizing more and more his own true nature, working more and more for the natures of every other, he finds spiritual knowledge springing up spontaneously within him. He seeks nothing for himself. He seeks all power and all knowledge only that he may help others less endowed. And then there's clairaudience, the same. It's clear hearing. And astral projection, which we are told is not the simple thing that some people seem to say it is. Another student wrote this. Madame Blavatsky described the psychic realm as the great deceiver and emphasized that psychic vision can never penetrate beyond the astral plane, which she spoke of as being the realm of deception and delusion par excellence. If you want spiritual vision, you have to behave like a spiritual being. If the individual could reach to the highest of the astral, he or she would still be in the psychic atmosphere and the attraction of our earth, populated with humanity's psychic refuse, which tends to be more evil and harmful than good and beneficial. True, genuine clairvoyance, clairaudience, all of these powers is not psychic, but spiritual. What we do urgently need to be developing, practicing, and perfecting are the powers of love, of altruism, of compassion, of doing our duty and understanding the law of karma and sharing what we can with others. So we're sure you have ideas and questions. Yes.
Well, we find it so interesting. From the time we started reading theosophy back in the 90s, which is pre-internet or pre-World Wide Web, the more we got to know the web, the more we saw it as a bona fide allegory for everything that HPB talked about in the astral and in the astral light, that it's a tablet of everything. And so we just find it uncanny how useful it is and how dangerous it is, and it can be anything to anyone. Whatever you want to create from it, it'll show you.
Useful and dangerous. What creates the difference? Yes.
Like the speaker said, the intention and motive of what you're going to do with it.
And discrimination and knowledge. For example, dynamite is a wonderful and powerful thing. Do we realize that it was invented by Nobel, of the Nobel Prize? It is an amazing tool. But I could blow up your house if I wanted to. It's my discrimination, my choice, what I want to do with something. And so the internet is this amazing array of nonsense and spiritual wisdom. And the only way to tell the difference is to develop your discrimination. The theosophy says it's very simple. There are three factors that must always be present, or what you're being given is partial or lying. Sometimes people will lie and say they have psychic wisdom and they'll give you all kinds of nonsense. Those three things are the same as the three fundamental propositions. There are three questions you have to ask of anything that you're given. Is it universal? Does it leave anyone or anything out? If it does, if it says those who do not believe this, those who do not agree with us are damned or out of the pale or whatever the expression is, then you know this is not truth. It can't be. The universe is all one, from one essence. Therefore, nothing can be left out. Certainly, there are those who have behaved in such a way to degrade their own spiritual nature. But that doesn't mean they're left out. It just means they have to start over. They have to repair the damage that they've done. You cannot destroy life. You cannot destroy spirit. And the second one, is this, whatever this explanation is it under law? Or is it chance or miracle or chaos? In other words, you will have this result only if you pay this money, if you join this group, if you follow this ritual or routine or dogma. Well, then you know it's not truth, because it is a universe of law. What you have, what you are entitled to, is yours, and no one can sell it to you or take it away from you, which is just the same as saying what you know, you know, and no one can take it from you. And the third one is this growing from within. Is this a method of instruction and the way all of life progresses from within outwards? So anything, anywhere, any book we read, we look to it for those three things: deity or the universal principle, law, and evolution or growth. Yes.
This student is curious why it is that it seems like there are some mediums that seem to be very specific in what they tell someone. I mean, things that just couldn't be Googled in their wildest dreams, couldn't be established, and time in and time again, it seems like they do it. What explanation is there?
Well, a medium is someone in an unnatural condition. We're told the opposite of a medium is a mediator, one that has control of their principles, looking into finer substance. A medium has made themselves passive, and they usually do not even know what they have given out when they're in that condition. It's literally, they are taken over. The individual consciousnesses that are alive on the astral plane are either executed criminals, suicides. In other words, nothing that you would want to meet up with, and yet they will take over a seance or a particular medium, and they can see into the astral light. They're moving and living in it. So, of course, they can say things that are pertinent, but they're not spiritual and they're not helpful. They're just more like dramatic. Yes?
And also, the effect of the aura around the individual, it's all there. They can have the ability to look into the aura.
Well, that's not mediumistic, though. That's more like a fortune teller, or is looking at your aura and can see, but can't tell if what they're seeing around you as pictures is what you hope will happen, what you're afraid will happen, or what will happen, that the seeds are dramatic enough that it can be pictured. But there's another part of what you just said. The aura around a medium attracting those beings from the astral light is, we don't know the right word, is like shared with everyone at that seance. In other words, you've all been poisoned and polluted to some degree because of that contact, and it's a very dangerous thing to keep up. For the medium, certainly, they usually go mad or get very ill, but it's also for the audiences. It's not a healthy thing to do. And what can a medium tell you that's going to help you when the help you need is spiritual? You can get that from the devotional books. You can get that from studying your own nature, keeping an eye on yourself. What am I about and why? And why do I make the same mistakes all the time? And what can I do to fix that? Yes?
A little bit was spoken about elementals, and you know, when it comes to the Wiccan religion, you know, everybody's heard about the good witches and the bad witches, the white witches and the black witches, whatever. But we haven't found too much in the philosophy on it, and our question has always been, you know, the good-natured people who are part of this sect, they're using and stirring up elementals with their spells, aren't they? And therefore, no matter what their good intentions are, really it's dangerous. Is that how we can see it?
Well, yes, it's dangerous for anyone in ignorance to be using powers. And quite often, they begin to realize that themselves, and they either seek out more information, more knowledge, or they just stop doing what they were doing. We know, having spent some time in New Orleans, that where there is a great deal of that kind of behavior or practice, you literally feel it on your skin. It's like everything is just a little electrical, and it's not exactly a pleasant thing. But using anything, even a car, with ignorance of how it works, where the brakes are, what you need to do to steer the thing, is dangerous. What do we know about the psychic world? Almost nothing. And the problem, and a lot of people are confused about this, the problem with psychic powers is not that they don't work, it's that they do. And they lead you deeper and deeper into the pollution of the astral light and the delusion that you are accomplishing something spiritual, because it's not physical, but it's not spiritual. Yes?
We have heard of the statement to keep a positive attitude. It would seem that in any mediumistic atmosphere, a positive attitude destroys that, or pushes it away, or it can have no effect on the other.
I don't know if that's true. We have known several very positive mediums. One of them, a Brazilian lady, who would be sent by doctors to a hospital when people could not go to sleep and they couldn't prescribe any drugs because of their condition. They would bring her in, and within 2 minutes of her being with the patient had a normal sleep. So there are positive mediums. We don't know what happened to that woman over time. Maybe the mediumistic part of it would bring her to something negative, and there would go the positivity. So, yes?
What we refer to is to the individuals that meet up with mediums. In other words, we who travel to us should maintain a positive attitude toward these things that occur.
Well, sooner or later, the attending to such things would have a degrading effect even on the one who is approaching mediums. We know this happened with Arthur Conan Doyle. He wrote about it. And Harry Houdini's widow, because he had promised if it was possible to speak from death, he would speak to her. And she went everywhere trying to make such a contact. It's really sad when you think about it, that we've lost the knowledge of reincarnation. So instead of preparing ourselves for a future life when we will meet that soul again, we're busy in the dregs of the astral light for contact. Yes?
Well, we're again referring to...
I think I keep misunderstanding you.
Where, huh? Where you have a group of people who consider themselves fortunate to be in the presence of a medium, and before they could get started, you were told to leave because they couldn't carry out their mediumistic practice with the presence of someone.
Yes. Behind you, there's something contributing.
That is an actual experience that I can refer to. If there are negative people...
Negative about the...
The situation,
exactly.
About the medium, or this is a whole line of malarkey, it's not true... That is interference within that circle, and they can make it so difficult that medium might say, for some reason, the atmosphere is not right. We can't contact anyone.
And we have an analogy for that. If you don't wire something electrically correctly with the negatives and the positives, the thing won't run. And it's not. People think that's dramatic, but it isn't. It's a reality. But if there's anything in the world we should not be involved in or with, it's mediumship. If we want to know what's going to happen tomorrow, let's set up the right causes. It's our choice. It's our ability. Yes?
Well, then, I'm sure it's still going on now, but what about channeling?
Channeling is mediumship. They just gave it a new word. That's all. The medium is the channel between you, who's requesting, and the astral, where all of it is stored. Well, we forget the astral light has many, many layers, and it begins with what's closest to the earth. And what that light holds is all of our feelings, thoughts, actions. It's like the world's biggest DVD. It's constantly being added to. But what's closest to us and easiest to reach is more negative than positive, because the positive that is stored in the astral rises above. Again, we have the physical demonstration of that. Yes?
40, 50, maybe 70, 80 years ago, one of the most important treatment methods, and many of the psychiatric wards, was the electric shock.
It still is. They are still using it differently.
And it would seem to calm down that individual, but
right.
It didn't seem to be the same. And it didn't last.
Well, if you've read any of the things going on in modern psychiatry, you will see they are still using electric shock. They're using it differently and in little bits at a time. It's no longer sort of a torture thing. I mean, they used to do lobotomies, for heaven's sakes. So they're trying to help in any way they can. And it would seem that electrical is more sensible even than chemical, because your whole function of your brain is this huge electric magnetic machine. So we don't know. It's an interesting subject.
So that these teachings gives us a method to acquire a true positive attitude that is not selfish, and the ability to understand the atmosphere.
Did everybody hear that? Because what you're saying is so valuable, but when you put your hand up like this, it's hard to hear you.
Okay, it's a question of moral and ethics. You mentioned the three fundamentals, and an expansion of those in every department of our nature would say that yes, we can be of help by maintaining that positive attitude.
Mm-hmm. There are some, and for each individual, it would be different. There are wonderful phrases you can memorize and pull out when you need them. I mean, come on, life is really mean sometimes, and it seems like it just piles up on you. You need some things to hold on to. There's a great little series of articles that offers some wonderful sort of memorized things you can repeat to yourself. I am a fragment of the all-pervading deity, entombed in the flesh. Tell yourself that when you stub your toe. I am a fragment of the all-pervading deity, entombed in the flesh. This toe pain that I have right now belongs to the body and the astral body. I am just observing it. I can step back. It doesn't have to throw me. Now, we can't always do that, but we can try. And that effort to be positive, to realize who and what we really are, is invaluable because it brings strength to the soul. So find your phrases, maybe in the voice of the silence, light on the path, the story of the Buddha, the light of Asia. Find your phrases that will be your medicine for your difficult times. Yes.
There was a prolific European writer in the late 1800s and well into the 1900s who was a student of theosophy, but figured out that he knew more and developed quite an extensive following and wrote many, many, many books, and he was brilliant. So one book that we picked up off a bookshelf but never bought, because it had the words theosophy and HPB's face on the front of the cover, we opened the book, and in the first chapter, this person was talking about how HPB was a great medium. And it just blew our minds that this brilliant person would ever say that. That just says he doesn't get it. Could we investigate what the difference between a medium and a mediator is?
Sure. The difference is passivity versus receptivity. A simplified metaphor of it. If I sit in front of the TV and whatever is on, I'm just watching it and I'm soaking it up. Now it's news, now it's violence, now it's something else. I am just letting it happen. That is passive. And it does have its effect on you. Things that you see and hear that you may think didn't matter that much and you weren't even really paying attention will come up in your dreams, in your active physical life. You are a reflection of all of the material you take in. Now, if I'm sitting in front of that TV and I'm selecting what I'm going to watch, and if I'm watching it, I am discriminatingly watching it, critically watching it. This makes sense to me. Oh, this I question. So I am active in it. That is the difference. A medium is passive and relinquishes its own position. A medium is not collecting information in the astral light. A medium has just opened the door, and whatever comes in, comes in. A mediator enters into their own inner nature, totally conscious, totally receptive, and can speak from their own experiences. We are, all of us, a very, very long way from that, because we're told not even to go after that, but to go over, oh, and over our own behavior, our own living, our own motives, our own thoughts and feelings, clean that up, and then we can become receptive to the higher or the spiritual. It's a huge task, but it's one that we all must do, sooner or later. But such an individual writing such a thing, you have to feel very sorry for them, that they miss so much that way by making that assumption. HPB did many things that people said, wow, she must be a medium, because they didn't know what the term means or what the difference was. And then that whole world turned against her when she said, you are confused. This is not spiritualism. You're not dealing with the spirits of the dead. You're dealing with the shell, the remnant of the life. The spirit is not there. And then everyone turned against her. But she was conscious. She knew what she was doing, and she could demonstrate it to other students. But she stopped doing it. Why? Because people were more interested in the phenomena than in knowing what is the law behind it. How are we to develop in order to use it? People were after sensation. And they still are. Look at our civilization. That's You know, who are our heroes these days? Well, let's see, there's rock stars, there's football stars. I mean, we always find it very amusing when you hear, what do they call it, a teaser for the news, and they will say, you know, there's great difficulty and great storms and in this part of the country, and this performer has just done this, whatever it is. And you're like, I'm sorry, that's not news. That's entertainment, and that's garbage. What is this? How have we become so poor in attention and rationality? It's amazing, yes.
Well, we were thinking of comedy. You don't see many real comic strips anymore, but laughing and smiling can teach. That word comedy, it's a powerful word within situations that would overcome us under normal circumstances. And there are just a few comic strips that still have a philosophical undertone where you can learn something.
Well, I hope you count Doonesbury as one of them. Actually, we recall right after the election of Obama, we should say of President Barack Obama, and be polite, the Doonesbury cartoon was this white man and a black man, and the black man was very celebratory, and the white man said, well, yes, it's wonderful for us. And the black man looked at him, and he was like, huh? And he said, after all, he's half white. Doonesbury is wonderful, is very provocative. He makes you think. His wife is Jane Pauley, the newswoman. There's a lot of good comedy out there. And HPB says one of the most important attributes that a disciple, and we are disciples, we are doing discipline towards getting this higher knowledge. What does she say is one of the most important things that a disciple must have? It's not IQ. It's not looks. It's not money. It's a sense of humor. Because if you can't laugh at yourself, I am a god in the making, and I'm an idiot? I mean, come on, that is just plain comical. How could I do or say the things I do and say and at the same time know that I'm a spiritual being? We are comical. We are comedy. But at the same time, it doesn't change the reality that even the stupidest thing we've ever done has no effect on the reality of our spiritual nature. It's pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and do it again. Try, try, try. Oh, that's Yoda, isn't it? Do or don't do. There is no try. Yes.
It has been commented a lot that we are not this body, but our true self is way beyond. So it seems to me the real spiritual challenge is to get to that.
Well, we think it's not that difficult to get to the realization that I am not this body, because the problem is we've never thought about it before. We've been raised to think, well, that's what we are. That's what science tells us. And even religion is very materialized. But if you stop and think for a minute, okay, this body. What about this body 25 years ago? Very different. What about 50 years ago? What about when I was born? How many times has this body died? I don't have the body I had when I was born. Where is it? It's gone. I don't have the body I had as a teenager. It's gone. And even science says every 7 years, all of those cells are completely replaced. So even the matter that I'm made of, it's gone. It's dead. This is new. So how could I be that? I still maintain my identity in spite of all those changes. All right, I've just proven for myself I'm not my body. Maybe I'm my mind. Well, when we go there, it gets even worse. How many times have I changed my mind, my opinion? The things I thought were magnificent when I was a teenager, you couldn't pay me to deal with them now. I've matured. I've grown up. I've widened my own horizon. Obviously, my mind has died a lot of times, and my emotions, my feelings. Well, if I'm not my body and I'm not my mind, what am I? I am my identity. That has never changed. I say I am I, and it's always been there. Who gave it to me? Nobody. Who told me about it? Nobody. It is self-evident. We realize it at a certain point in growth within the human body. We knew it before, but put it into a human body and it loses some of its own awareness. So it has to grow to it. Once you know, well, I am I, what can you say about it? Nothing. You cannot, if you start right now describing yourself as an individual, you could never finish, because the potential is grander than the universe, grander than space. You are that which is changeless, all-powerful, all-possible, everywhere present. That I is like space. It has no conditions, no beginning, no ending. Once you really focus on that, we have nowhere else to stand. You know, I am I, and that's all there is. If that is the most important thing in the universe, that is what I have to trust, and that is what I want to develop. Not psychic powers, but this awareness that I am. I am a spiritual being, a perceiver in evolution, using physical and astral life as a workbook. That's all I need to know. Yes.
I can't help but relate this to the practice of bhakti yoga,
mm-hmm.
where you become oneness and loving kindness.
Yes,
and
it's the same thing.
A lot of the higher, or a lot of the, I guess, more enlightened practicers, practicing people of it, are able to read minds.
Are able to what?
Read minds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Really,
it might be reading the heart,
yeah.
and reading the astral for one's benefit. Bhakti yoga is love, is devotion. And we sometimes you'll find that from your own parents. They will tell you something you don't want to hear for anything in the world, but it comes from love, and you know that. We knew someone like that. We called him our laser surgeon. He would say to you something. It was like cutting you wide open. He'd show you what was really ugly, close it, and never mention it again. Once you knew about it, it was yours to deal with. That is a bhakti yoga guru. And we should all try to use love that way, with the best of intentions. And not saying hurtful things, but trying to say what will help them. And that's a hard thing to discriminate against. Yeah. Yes?
We should always remember one of the most potent weapons used to conquer the Native Americans who were holding on to their land, especially Midwest and Northwest, and that was fire water. Now, why did they call it fire water?
Well, certainly it set fire to the individual who wasn't used to it. That's a horrible history. And it'll break your heart if you really read the history of what was done to the natives in this country, who in trust did not understand you can't own the earth anyway, and who kept being moved and moved and driven out and lied to and cheated. And if today there were a fair trial, and there's several pending, a fair trial between the U.S. and the native peoples and their treaties, we would all have a lot of moving to do, because they still legally own what we have appropriated. Now, as individuals, we are not responsible for that. But as individuals, we should be very concerned when we see it happening to someone else or somewhere else. It's that whole thing of greed, the fear of poverty, the fear of death, the fear of being without. It's so ridiculous when you consider we're immortal. Our deeds and our acts follow us, but they're not what holds us back. What holds us back is our ideas and our feelings about things. We keep creating our own prisons and move into them and start complaining immediately. It is comical. We'll just mention that a wonderful study is go to the 10 items in Isis Unveiled, Volume 2. It starts on page 588. It's the 10 items about magic and how nature is threefold and so is man, and that magnetism is the great power of magic. And magic is knowledge. It's using knowledge. And our subject for next Sunday is the healing power of magnetism. Now, there's a proper use of what we would call psychic powers, but it's really spiritual powers. We wanted to end with this from Mr. Judge, because even though we might give out all the warnings in the world, many people are still looking for how to develop. Mr. Judge wrote, "I could not tell you of any particular course to develop the inner faculties. And permit me to say that if I knew of such a course, I would be very reluctant to tell it, because it is full of danger. It is necessary first to understand philosophy, to understand yourself so far as it can be understood on this plane, to discipline oneself, to develop virtue, attention, fortitude. Then one is prepared to go further. That spiritual inner faculties exist is easily demonstrated by their existence in the individuals in the race, and secondly, from their necessity. The best advice I can give you is to continue studying, but at the same time, add actual practice in the way as doing as much work as you can for other people. By working for other people, we put into practice the inner beliefs which rest upon unity. We develop certain faculties in our nature. We increase our spirituality. For the first and most important step in the cultivation of spiritual faculties is the practice of good thoughts, good acts, and constantly endeavoring for other people. By following this, you will find yourself growing from within more and more." Meeting is adjourned.